One. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Peter Llewellyn. I run the services at medcomsnetworking.com. So, information, resources, activities, and so on for people who work across the globe in and around medical communications, medical education, medical publishing, and so on. You'll find we run a lot of webinars and we collect the videos over at Network Pharma TV. Lots of videos over there now. There's hundreds of videos from the webinars and other sorts of video content. So if you've not seen it, go and have a look. Also, shout out to anyone that's interested in joining the business. Take a look at firstmedcomsjob.com, where we provide information for people who want to join, maybe as medical writers, account managers, and so on. And there's more. So have a look around. Medcomsnetworking.com is the sort of the central resource. So, just a little bit of context here. We're talking with the publishers, the journal publishers. Thank you very much for joining us about the use of AI. I'm going to stress we're none of us AI experts. I think it's worth making that point. What I wanted today was just a freewheeling discussion about how we're dealing with the sort of questions that are coming up around journal publishing to do with AI. We ran our usual end of year Meet the Publishers session. It's only a few weeks ago, end of December. You can see the video on Network Pharma TV, and it was inevitable we were talking a bit about AI, and we thought there's a webinar in here. We should be talking specifically about this. Also, I'm very aware that we've had Bain & Smith meeting a couple of weeks ago, so and a lot of that was talking about AI as well. So this is just a very simple opportunity for us to sit and talk very openly with each other about the sort of questions that are coming up. And for the audience in particular, we've got a good international audience again. Thank you very much for joining us to put their questions and observations in, and we'll deal with what we can. So on that note, I'm not quite sure where we're going to end up, guys, but I know from having talked to you a few days ago about what we're going to talk about today, we can easily fill a lot of time talking about all the stuff that's going on. So I'm looking forward to a lively discussion. I'm going to do what I always do, ask you to introduce yourselves and your company, and I'm going to go in alphabetical order by surname. So Claire, you're on first.
Thanks, Peter. Hi, everyone. I'm Claire Cook. I'm the editorial manager for the ADIS journals, which are part of Springer Nature. Been with the company 15 years in various editorial roles and now manage and oversee the Rapid Plus journals, which are our rapid publication open access titles. So, in terms of what we're currently doing with AI from a Springer Nature wide perspective, we've launched Curie, which is an AI powered in-house writing tool. So, it supports researchers with their scientific writing. So, particularly if English isn't a first language, it combines a large language model with an AI digital editing tools kind of developed in-house specifically for scientific writing. Springer Nature's also acquired Slimmer AI, which is a company that we've been working with for many years. And what they're doing, amongst other things, is helping to speed up and improve the publishing process. So, helping with things like identifying appropriate editors on submission of a paper, recommending appropriate peer reviewers, and identifying potential problems like plagiarism, and paper mills. So within Springer Nature, we've got dedicated teams working on other potential uses. There are people within Springer Healthcare, a couple of whom I can see on the call, so can hopefully help me answer some questions if I don't know the answer. And then people within the actual ADIS team, which I work in, we've got people really interested in this stuff. So we've been playing around with how we can use it as well on a day-to-day basis. So things like helping to write like editorial board update emails. We've been looking to see how useful it is for generating like commissioning topic ideas. I used it to create like a marketing flyer for our summary of research articles. So some things, I'm sure there are more. So looking forward to hearing from everyone else on the panel to see what they've been doing.
Fantastic. I mean, that's actually covered an awful lot of ground very quickly. I'm trying to think of something that you guys might be doing that you haven't actually mentioned that AI is having an effect on. So that in itself is an interesting message or point, I think. Let's just keep going to the introductions. Hamish, tell us who you are and where you are.
Sure. So my name is Hamish McDougall, and I'm the Publishing Solutions Manager at Sage. So essentially, I am the first point of contact for publications teams from med comms and pharma companies. So please do feel free to reach out to me if you've got any queries at all. So Sage publishes over 1,000 journals, about 250 specifically in the clinical medicine space. So we're always exploring new tech solutions to streamline and enhance our publications offerings. And of course, given the rise of AI technologies, we've been tracking and examining the use of AI and incorporating it where appropriate. And we do recognize AI does have a role to play in the future of medical publishing and look forward to announcing some exciting new partnerships in the coming weeks, actually, once we can. But also at the same time, we are sort of being cognizant of any sort of potential ethical confidentiality and compliance concerns that can arise, especially with the rise of generative AI too.
Excellent. Okay, thanks, Hamish. Johnny, same question to you. Where are you? What do you do?
Hi, yeah, thanks, Peter. So I'm Jonathan Patience. I'm the head of publication development at Taylor & Francis. We're known for our expert collection journals, so the Expert Opinion and Expert Review series. We recently acquired Future Science Group back in December, so many of you may be familiar with their journals. And we're also known for our work in PLS and PLSPs, accelerated publication, and our in-house editorial assistance on those journals. My team are a great contact point for any authors, medical writers, or publication teams wanting to discuss publishing options at TNF. So do feel free to reach out to me if that's you and you want to discuss that at the company. I've been working in medical publishing for about 12 years in a variety of editorial roles in the past. So familiar with processing manuscripts and making decisions and the sort of internal processes involved there. So it's interesting to think about how AI might be impacting that. In terms of what we're doing at Taylor & Francis, we have an AI task force, which is looking at the potential opportunities for AI within the business. And we have a number of things in the pipeline, which, I'm unfortunately not able to share just yet today. We are very actively looking at it, looking at new ways that we can use it and new ways that we can assist authors and reviewer teams using AI. And I think there's definitely plenty of opportunities for authors with writing, with the processing of papers, making sure that we're finding the right reviewers at the right time, and with the dissemination of research too.
Excellent. Okay, thanks, Johnny. And Joe, again, where are you? Who are you? Where are you?
Hi there, thanks, Peter. So I'm Jo Walker. I am co-founder and publishing director at Bakaris Publishing. So we are, well, I guess a relatively new publisher still. We've sort of been formed in the past sort of 18 months. I used to be part of, I used to work for Future Science Group, and yeah, but as I said, about 18 months ago, took one of the journals and our companion website, and with a couple of colleagues, formed our own publishing company. So unlike the others, we are, we are three people, actually now four people. So we don't have the sort of same ways to use sort of like task force, etc., on AI. So we've been using AI more in a more practical sense, sort of firstly helping, well, see if it could help content in our journal, sort of the Journal of Comparative Effectiveness research, such as maybe helping authors write plain language summaries, and also helping to find peer reviewers for content, which has not gone well, unfortunately. And then we've also been sort of toying with how we can use sort of AI as a sort of to help as a language tool in writing content for our website, the evidence base. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the discussions today to see what how we're all using AI in our workload.
Okay, and I'm sort of interested in the course of this discussion to get at a little bit more what you individually, personally, are doing with AI. I think that's interesting, and if you can throw some tools or some tricks and whatever, that's good because a lot of people watching these still aren't playing very much themselves. So anything we can do in terms of understanding what you're doing and maybe giving some people some signposts would be useful. More important, not more importantly, but separately, the sort of the way the business is going about doing things and. We've covered a lot of ground there quite quickly. There's going to be a lot to talk about in the next 40 minutes. Joe, I've sort of set you up a little bit. So let's just, this is going to be a very sort of, random sort of conversation, but we thought we'd start with basically guidance for people, for the authors, I suppose. That's what we're talking about. Let's stick with that to begin with. ICMG came out very quickly last year, as I understood it, with the sort of, because at the beginning of last year, and maybe about this time a year ago, there was lots of fun and games being had with ChatGPT being an author and lots of debate about that. And ICMG came out quite quickly and said it can't happen. But subsequently, there's been a number of revisions to their code and their guidance. So I guess, as I understand it, it's mostly about transparency. So I guess you're all following their sort of guidance and you're passing that guidance on in your own ways to your authors. But Joe, just start the conversation by telling us a little bit in more detail how you guide authors in terms of their use of AI.
Yeah, have to. So, we have so my colleague Laura works on the Journal of Comparative Effectiveness Research. She was an author from GPP 2022, so she's quite she knows what she's talking about in terms of publishing guidelines. So she is very on the ball when it comes to what the latest sort of like WAME and ICMJ recommend. And then there was ICMJ produced another update at the end of January, and amongst some of the updates was the use of AI, not just for authors but also for reviewers. So this included more sort of transparency about where to disclose how AI is used, whether it's in the methods of how AI might have been used to sort of help write a paper, or whether it's in the acknowledgements. I think there's still a little bit of ambiguity as to where exactly it should be, and then again, that's where each journal then would interpret those guidelines. So, for instance, we ask people to use any to cite any AI that they've used in the acknowledgements section. We just think it's more transparent that way. And then there was also in the update as well, there was also guidance for reviewers and how editors should, address the fact that reviewers most likely are could be using AI in their review of journal articles. So, it's advice from that side, and ICMJ sort of state that, reviewers should, in the first instance, ask the journal if it's okay for them to use an AI tool in their review process. I mean, it could be that it's maybe even just, checking for language rather than the sort of factual accuracy. And there are, closed systems where reviewers can, if they want, upload papers, but we don't advocate that at all as well. And also, as I've mentioned before as well, there's, plain language summaries as well, where the AI can fall into that as well. So that's sort of the advice that we are giving authors at the minute and reviewers.
Okay. And can we just, because that's two different groups. Let's stick with the authors for the moment. Claire, you're nodding away there. Just again, just practically speaking, from your point of view and the way you work as a company with your authors, how are you spelling out what they can and can't do, and what's the challenges that you're facing?
So it's similar to what Joe said, really, and we're following all the guidelines. So we've put it in our own instructions for authors guidelines with kind of relevant links to the ICMJ guidelines and say that we endorse those. So I guess it's like Joe touched on, it's how they're using it, authors and reviewers, and disclosing that. We're saying as a company you can't be using generative AI to create images because of all the copyright issues around that. There's ongoing legal issues in the wider world about that. So things may change depending what comes from that. But it's how you use it. So as long as they're disclosing how they've used it, like you said, if it's just to help with language, or if it's to help with identifying references or something, but then that's on the journal to have a look at that and see if they deem that appropriate use or not. So as long as it's about transparency and following guidelines around copyright and confidentiality. And yeah, again, like Joe said, if you're using for reviewers, they shouldn't be putting a full papers into a large language model because it's the copyright issues and confidentiality issues. And if a reviewer is using it to generate a review with minimal human input, then that wouldn't be appropriate. But if they're just using it to kind of assist with some of the writing, or again, references or things, but that's again up to the author, up to the journal to decide if that's an appropriate use.
Okay, I can see we're not going to separate out reviewers and authors the way I wanted to.
Sorry,
So
yeah,
we'll
no,
just accept the fact you're all
it
going to talk
kind of
about both.
fits together.
But my Hamish, Hamish and John, I was looking at you and you were sort of nodding a bit. So I'm guessing you're not going to say very much very different. But Hamish, if I sort of take it on a little bit of a stage, if we're all saying we're telling our authors, that's the bit I'm trying to focus on at the moment, tell us what you're doing. I suppose my question is, how do you know that they're telling you what they're actually doing? What sort of
I think.
policing goes on at your end in terms of assessing whether they are following your guidance or not? I find that an interesting question, if I may.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a challenge, and there is a sort of an element of trust here, where, and we can provide the guidance to people as well. But I think that's also where we have sort of guidance for editors too, and for reviewers too. So, going sort of back to that too. But I think, there are certain things that, you can pick up on, and humans can be quite good at picking up on even very simple things like, sometimes people might forget to delete ChatGPT prompts, which we've seen a couple of times, which is a dead giveaway.
Right.
We've definitely seen that as well. But yeah, there are lots of things as well that sort of maybe separate human writing from AI writing, and it's not a catch-all rules. But so, for example, so Sentence structure, for example. So I think, humans tend to sort of have a bit more variability in the lengths of their sentences, where AI often tools tend to have sort of more consistency. Maybe humans tend to use more sentences per paragraph, whereas, for example, AI would be sort of quite consistent about that. So I guess it's just providing all of these little things and all of these little bits of guidance to editors about it as well. Also, I'm not sure if this is definitely true or not, but I've heard people say that so use of sort of equivocal words like, for example, or like but, because, however, apparently AI sometimes will sort of be less inclined to use those things, whereas humans will use them quite frequently within writing too.
Okay, and unless I'm quite happy to have an argument here, okay, and maybe the audience wants to pile in as well, right? But Johnny, I mean, you take this one on a little bit further. I would argue simplistically that you can do bad AI and good AI if you like, okay, but that there's fundamentally there's no way of proving that someone's used AI in generating something if they've done it well. Okay. So a lot of what you're talking about there, Hamish, is a little bit sort of like, we think this and the judgment about that and all the rest of it. But actually, I mean, and there are good writers and bad writers, and these sorts of comments can be applied to everyone. But fundamentally, my understanding at the moment is, although a lot of people talk about it, my understanding remains that there is no proven way of going, I've got a tool that will say yay or nay to AI. And so therefore, there's judgment being applied. I just find that interesting. And Johnny, just tell me a little bit more about what happens at in your
Yeah,
organization.
I'm happy to expand on that a bit. I think basically the publishing community agrees on five basic guiding principles for AI. So that's transparency and accountability, quality and integrity, privacy and security, and fairness and sustainability. So our guidance is based around that. If authors are using AI, in the we follow ISMG, so we've already covered that they could use them for if they're using them as a key part of data collection, then they should be describing in their methods. If they're using it as writing assistance, they should be describing the acknowledgements. But I think what you touched on there is the fact that it's very difficult to detect, and we haven't really found a reliable way to detect it. And I think the challenge of that is also that you could falsely detect some as using AI, and actually is it necessarily always a bad thing? Because there can be responsible use that's used in line with those
Exactly.
principles that I've mentioned, which is potentially acceptable. But I think that the biggest challenge for us is that it makes it a lot easier to make something look reliable, but actually isn't. And for a long time, we know that there's been a large number of people who are involved with paper mills and who do submit these papers to publishers and try to get them published. And I think the biggest concern there now is that this AI makes that a lot easier for people. Makes it a lot easier to spot, a lot less easy to spot it. And it makes it a lot easier for people to generate papers. So where previously you might have had a human writing these fabricated papers, instead they could probably generate these papers in a matter of minutes and kind of overwhelm publishers with the number of papers that they're submitting as a result, which we then have to screen out. So it is very challenging, and it is definitely something we should be concerned about.
And the problem with this sort of technology, or maybe all technologies, is there's a good side and a bad side, isn't there? Yeah, we can sort of talk about the good sides, how it can help and speed things up, and it can. I mean, I always think it's funny that we talk about it like humans are perfect and robots aren't, whereas actually it's possibly arguably the other way around. Yeah, we seem to want a robot to be perfect, where we'll put up with a human not being perfect. But it's really important that human checks this, Peter, all the time is said, and it's coming up in the chat room. And I get all that. But we do tend to dwell on the negative sides with a bit of a shame. And I just think, so again, it's just important that people get that. But what when you, this might be a stupid question, when you're asking for acknowledgement of what AI tools they're using, how far do you go? Do you define what you mean by AI tool? How far do you go? Do you ask them whether they use the spell checker or something? I do you understand what I'm getting at there? Because it seems like we dwell on the necessity to say that we're using a AI tool, but there's all sorts of
I
tools that people use to put a paper together. Who's that? Johnny, just say a few words on that front.
Yeah, the ICMG guidelines do actually specify some examples. So they specify large language models, chatbots, and image creators. So I think, yeah, I understand what you're getting at, in that there are some sort of AI which has become commonplace, which now we don't really think about. I suppose maybe the more the newer models are probably. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done to fine-tune them and to make sure they're reliable. And I think that because there is so much scope for inaccuracies and the sources that they're getting them from, it relies on the whole of the internet. We know that a large portion of what is on the internet is not reliable. So it's only as good as the sources. So I think there is a reason to be concerned about that. I know that there is a lot of work going on in trying to create AIs that limit their sources to potentially just academic publishers. And I believe that there was Scopus AI is sort of one of the attempts at trying to use AI to assist researchers using only like the academic record, which hopefully would be more reliable with that problem.
Good
I think, and
answer.
again, sorry, I'm going to cut. So I'm going to just. There's so many directions we could go in here. I know. Okay, but just to get this one out there, I think, and I think we're in the same danger that everyone's always in having these discussions, because when we're talking AI, there's an audience of people here who are thinking different things. All right, but a lot of people think ChatGPT. Yeah, that's still something that dominates all the conversation, right? Whereas actually, AI tools. There's a gazillion of them that aren't ChatGPT. And for instance, I can't remember who it was, but one of you was talking about sort of, confidentiality and sort of, the concern about putting, as yet to be published content into AI. I think what you meant was into something like ChatGPT. And there are plenty of ways of ring fencing information now. Copilot's been mentioned in the chat, as I can sit here with Copilot on my machine and that information goes nowhere, but the tool and the functionality is extremely useful. And I think, again, we just have to be a bit careful when we're talking to sort of separate out some of this stuff. Sorry, I know, and I'm sorry, Claire, but Joe, I know you were trying to say something 5 minutes ago. So do you want to say, and then Claire was trying to say, so Joe, what were you trying to say? Because I think you were cut off at one stage.
All I'm just going to say about the sort of the AI detection tools. I know that there's a lot out there that journals are trialing as well, but like Nell Watson did a keynote at ISMAP at the end of January, and she made a very, very, very valid comment that there's actually nothing reliable at the minute that can detect if AI has been used. And even if there was, the AI would then adapt itself to then not be detectable by the tools. So I don't think it's ever, I'm not sure if it's ever gonna there ever be an AI detection tool, because it will
Exactly,
just continually evolve and adapt. So I'm not even sure if we do need it. Nobody, you don't have
exactly.
to, you don't, as you said, you don't have to acknowledge when you use spell check. So I'm not sure, I'm sure in a year or so, some of these guidelines of what should be acknowledged will sort of gradually maybe phase out.
I think it's a really important point, and I've seen, I know, I've seen. In fact, I suppose I've had a conversation with someone who has been accused of using AI in a manuscript that she developed, which she insists she didn't anyway, but that was used as an excuse for not paying her. I mean, that's I know that there's, let's not get too worried about that side of it, because it might just be a little bit quirky, but that stuff is going on in real life. And I think we, again, we just have to have open conversation about what's real and what really can be done. Yeah. Sorry. Again, that's just the point I wanted to throw out there, but Claire, come on, you wanted to say something. Sorry,
Yeah,
I'm
I mean, it
cutting you
kind
off.
of ties in with that anyway, because I was thinking of it. You can almost think of it the other way, of how much human input has been had in the generation of something. Because there's been cases where people have trialed putting raw data into some form of AI to see if it can generate a whole scientific manuscript. And the examples I've seen, they've not been great, they've not been terrible, but it still needed all that human input to check it. There's been hallucinations in there or nonsense sentences. So, however it's being used, and like you said, maybe we won't necessarily need to check for AI use because it will always be being used, but it's how much at the moment, how much human input is needed, because it is needed in most
Yeah.
cases.
Okay,
And what
and
the
that's
output
not, and
of
that
it,
isn't.
I was just going to say, the output could be so far removed from what was originally generated by the AI tool that you couldn't even check if AI was used, because you could sort of like you amalgamate sentences, you remove bit, you chop things around so that it doesn't even look recognizable from what the AI tool was just more or less like an inspiration, and then that got you to your end output.
Exactly. So the narrative around this is just wrong, isn't it? I mean, what's important for you guys is you're getting decent science reported properly, accurately, and whatever else in a way that's accessible to the reader. It doesn't really matter too much how it's put together. What people are worrying about, and you've touched on it, the paper mill side and all of is people just going, well, we don't care about that, so we're just going to chuck a load of stuff at them and see what gets published. The discussions around what's happening on Amazon and AI generated books and stuff at the moment is sort of fascinating. But there is surely an argument to say it, none of this is all of it matters, but none of it matters because what you want to do is have a paper that's properly written, presented, accurate, and yada yada yada. Whatever tools they've used. That's not the issue. So let's stop talking about that. Let's just concentrate on making sure that the final output is okay. Let's just, and it's just interesting. I'm sorry, I'm keeping one eye on the chat. There's quite a lot of comments coming in. I can't keep up with it. Let's just go in a slightly different direction. Joe, it was you that said it, and I don't know whether I misunderstood you, but I think we'll go in a different direction here. You said something like you'd looked at the use of AI in finding peer reviewers, but that didn't work very well. So I'm just going to pick you up on that and just ask, what did you mean, and why didn't it work very well, sort of thing. So that's presumably using AI tool to go and do research, and give us a bit of context. This is a very different direction to go in with AI.
This was, gosh, probably, I don't know, a year or so ago when sort of ChatGPT first sort of came into popular use. And I thought, oh, you know what, I thought, you know what, I'm going to put the title of a paper into ChatGPT and say, can you please suggest 10 people who could review this paper, provide scientific feedback on this paper. And it came up with 10 reviewers, and I just thought, great, this is going to be really helpful with here. And then I went in and I thought, right, I'm just going to check them. And none of the people, it made up institutions. I think maybe there was one person who was actually a real person, but not related to the content of that manuscript. So I think, I mean, I since then there are other tools I know that are available to find, valid reviewers. But I think it is, this is a really good example of how, I know we talk about ChatGPT, but how it does hallucinate facts, which is why I don't think ChatGPT should ever be a tool to get information. I think it could be used as a more of a language assistance rather than for information.
But let's just pursue that one for a little. So my argument would be that it's known to hallucinate, but it's getting better and better and better at a phenomenal rate. And again, it comes down to whether you're talking ChatGPT or the sorts of technology that you can put on front of something else. Just out of it, just pursue this line for a moment. So using AI to go and research people, content, whatever. Who else in the on the panel wants to talk about? Have you got any experience? Hamish, you're nodding. Talk a bit about that aspect.
Yeah, and just continuing on, I guess it's about using the right tool for the right job because, ultimately ChatGPT, that's not what it's designed to do. It's not designed for finding reviewers. However, we do have fantastic tools for, dissemination and discoverability of manuscripts that can then tap into that and then help you find authors. So, for example, Dimensions is fantastic as a sort of a really, really useful, powerful tool that allows you to really sort of delve into specific types of content. I don't personally work on peer review myself, and I can't sort of say if people have used it to find reviewers, but I can imagine how it would be useful. And Claire could probably talk a bit more because she mentioned that they use reviewers. They use a tool to sort of find peer reviewers specifically too.
Yeah, go on, Claire, go on, pick it up.
So yeah, it's not rolled down to the ADIS journals yet, so I've not used it personally. But yes, it's Slimmer AI is that's part of what they do within the wider Springer Nature, which will be rolled out to everyone. I think it probably comes down to the prompts and things that are used as well. They've got to be really specific. If you're using the same prompts all the time, are they just going to come out with the same reviewers and you just end up, just getting the same names generated? I don't know. But I guess it's how the tools are developed and the specific prompts being used to find those people would be the key thing.
Okay, I mean, I still imagine, and we're there now, aren't we? I don't, let's take pharma company X. I always have been slightly startled when I've thought about how much information they've got about their product Y. Yeah. And I've known medical information managers who simply seem to know everything there is in that database, but they don't really, sort of thing. It's a huge amount of content. And you can imagine very easily having a ring-fenced domain where all that content is there. So you know it's all verified, it's all everything. And then putting the sort of Chat GPT type tool on the front of it and asking any questions you like. I just find that mind blowing. And I know that's now happening, but that's a very different scenario than going to Chat GPT and asking it a question. And you see what I'm saying? And again, I think people need to understand that that stuff's happening now. I mean, there are a number of drug companies who are talking public about the fact they've got those systems in place, aren't they? You see what I mean? And that leads into my question, because you guys have got such a ton of information. I just wonder whether any of you are already working on, you must be working on, some sort of search functionality that has a little chatbot on the front of it that enables me to go to the database of Taylor Nelson papers or something and just ask a question in my own way of that phenomenal database and get content that I couldn't have got out of any other sort of way. Is that making sense? John, you're looking like I'm not making sense, but does that make any sense? Because I just think that's where AI sort of just delivers so much power to me as a user. And well, anyway, you see what I'm saying, but does that make any sense? As I say, Johnny, you're looking like I'm not making a lot of sense there, or
No,
I'm not.
I guess obviously, we can't talk too much about the stuff that's in process. So it's a bit hard to comment on what's going through that we haven't sort of developed or released yet. I mean, one thing that we do have is that we've got a journal suggester. So if you paste in your kind of title and abstract, then it can come up with pretty accurate suggestions for journals. So I know there's many kind of medical writers on the calls who might contact the editorial office and then have to wait to have that email correspondence. And obviously we like to do that. We like to chat to people and give that those personalized recommendations. But if you are short on time and you just want an education of journals that are suitable, then at TNF we do have a journal suggester that you can do that, and they're pretty accurate.
In terms
And
of readers.
presumably just getting more
Sorry.
and more accurate as you go along, aren't they? I mean, and that's where the technology presumably can make huge leaps. Go on. Sorry, Claire, go on.
I was just going to say, in terms of the reader as well, I know like on Springlink, I guess on other publisher platforms as well, we now have, as you're reading the article, it comes up saying, people who have read this article have also read these articles,
Right.
and it takes your links to other relevant articles as well.
Okay. And so why can't I go? Okay, so here's a bit of future gazing. Maybe it's future gazing. I don't think it is particularly future gazing. So why can't I go to one of your databases, have a little chat bot at the front, type in, I'm looking for information about this, get back several papers that, magically come together and the AI is accurate. And then I say, yeah, but I want, I only read German or something, so please translate all that into German. And I get the information back. I mean, can you imagine that being a scenario in the near future or not?
I think having a tool like that would be amazing, but you're only then restricting the content that is from that publisher. So you're
That might
not.
be what I want. I mean, so
Right, okay.
again,
So
there's
I.
different scenarios here, but I
Yeah.
might just be saying, look, I know you've got lots of good content about this. I'm looking for what you've got about this, and I want it in German or Italian or. I mean, in principle.
I guess it could be doable, but we're all dependent on the people who make our platforms. So, I mean, we don't, for instance, make our journal platforms. That we use a comp we use companies like Atopon and Silverchair and others I can name, not yet though. That all make the publisher platforms for us, and we then buy a package from them. So that would all be, and then they charge us an absolute fortune to like even make a basic website. So, and this is from
But in
experience. So
principle,
I mean, principle it could, but I mean, you'd need to get someone. I mean, for us, Vicaris, we've got one journal. It would never. I mean, it could work, but we would never be a test case for that because it would just be. It can't cost too much money. But for the bigger publishers, I think that could be something that is doable. But I mean, you'd probably want. I for my in my opinion, you'd want something like that on plugged into Puppet or Medline, having that tool, and
absolutely.
that would scan
I agree.
the whole of the literature. And you'd want that on the front end of PubMed. I think that would
Yeah,
be the
okay.
most, yeah, that would be the
I want
most
everything. So I
useful.
think I'm
Yeah.
just trying to go middle ground. Simon's
Just give
saying
me some
in the
jobs,
chat the
sorry.
reliability is not yet robust enough to have these facilities public facing.
Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, that's fine and we can say that, but actually what I'm trying to get at is what where we're heading, and an awful lot of stuff is a lot more robust than people are facing up to. And lots of people in translation are going, my business is being turned upside down because translation tools are now becoming extremely robust. So at what point do we say it's robust enough to go public facing? It's a human judgment, isn't it? Sorry, Hamish, go on, jump in, go on.
Yeah, just to kind of interject, Joe brought up a really good point of it ultimately being sort of publisher agnostic. And as far as I'm aware, there are a couple of tools that are already beginning to do this, like maybe not in the same way that sort of, a chatbot, but ultimately kind of a sort of a wider publishing tool that can allow you to sort of prompt things and then also click onto translations as well. So they are kind of beginning to to be developed. So for example, I know our discovery. Is an example of one as well, which I've seen before, and it might not necessarily have all the functions that you sort of have described, but it's the early steps of what you're talking about.
Okay, let's jump around a little bit. I want to talk about PLS for a little bit. It's inevitable we're going to talk about that at some stage. Let's bring it up. And again, let me be the stupidly simple person on the panel. What's if as we're all probably going to agree, PLS is a good thing. Let's not get into a debate about exactly what we're doing in PLS, but in principle, opening up access to scientific content by producing plain language summaries is a good thing, which sort of is just regurgitating information in a slightly different style. So why, and there's discussion around how writers, good writers, can produce good PLS. But is it so difficult to imagine? Is it already happening? PLS just being turned out in minutes, because you use the AI tool. And I do know that there is some research going on, which is sort of looking at, PLS generated by a writer, PLS generated by, AI, and PLS that's generated by sort of AI and then worked on by a human. And I just wonder what insights you've got into that sort of thing. Because again, in principle, why wouldn't you just go every paper that's published with us, we've got a button by the side of it, you can push and you read and it regurgitates a PLS, the sort of PLS you want as a reader. I know I'm being overly simplistic. I know there's some rabbit holes to go down there, but anyone got any views or any gossip, gossip's the wrong word, insight into how people are looking at the development of PLS? And you were nodding away when I was saying some of this work that's being done to compare and contrast and so on. So who wants to start with Hamish? Honest to me, it looks like you
Oh
want to
God,
start.
Hamish,
Yeah,
yeah,
I know. I
look.
think we're all desperate to jump in on this as well. Go.
And we
Okay,
have
go.
members of the audience here who've specifically worked on
Exactly,
some of
yeah.
that research specifically. But yeah, it is just to address that first point, is why not have this button? I think ultimately human verification is crucial when we're working with large language models, is absolutely essential. So for the time being, I think what we're all going to be exploring is a sort of a hybrid model. So having the vast majority of the work done by a large language model or whatever AI tool, but then having a human verification step. And that does, immediately cut down an enormous amount of the work, makes it much more accessible, much easier. But I can't see for the time being there just being us being able to just move away from any kind of human verification.
I mean, that's
Okay,
ultimately
Joe, go
what
on,
we
you
want.
follow up.
I would just say, that's ultimately what, as a publisher, you'd want on your. I mean, this would be you talking about the sort of the scenario of the future. For me, in the future, you could have the sort of scientific manuscript on your website, and then you'd have generate a plain language summary for it, and it would do it, generate it in French, and it would automatically do it within sort of seconds, and you wouldn't have to, submit a plain language summary. But it'll just automatically be there along. So if you don't want to read the plain language summary, you don't have to. But if you want to have the plain language summary, you can have to. It's, sort of a manuscript 2.0 type of situation or journal article 2.0, where you have all these different sort of, AI tools can, then create an infographic on this article or download a PowerPoint slide summarizing the article. I don't know, something like that. That would be the ultimate use for AI in journals. But I think it's a long way off. And as Hamish said, you still need a lot of human verification. But it will hopefully get to a stage where perhaps that human verification sort of stage becomes less and less needed as the, you know, the tools get better. So then it might be possible to do that as well. I know for us, we are toying with mandating plain language summaries in our journal and then giving authors the, you know, suggestions on how they can use AI to, you know, maybe using Copilot, as you said, how they can use then AI to create a plain language summary. And then if they can't do it, won't do it, mostly it's the cases they won't, then, you know, we might say, well, look, we've done it on your behalf. We've peer reviewed it. Would you be happy for us to publish it with your manuscript? I mean, obviously that all
Okay,
has to go
and
through author approvals, but that's, you know, that's a
yeah.
scenario that we're
So,
toying with. Toying
okay. So
with.
let's pick up Mario's point in the chat box. Okay, so let's take it one step further. Why do you have to worry about this at all? So you publish the paper, and then I come along, and go, that's interesting. I want a plain language summary. I've got Copilot on my system. I'm just going to dump it in, and 30 seconds later, I've got a plain language summary on my system, in my closed system, the way I want it. Prompted in the way that I want it. So thank you very much. That's great. But that I don't know, is that I think that's a that's actually I think that's quite just an interesting idea. And why not? That can happen now.
You know,
So
even
I'm going go
if it's a published
okay,
paper,
Joe, go
it's
on.
in the pub. Yeah, if it's a published paper, it's in,
Exactly,
and
exactly.
it's open
So
access.
you
It's in
don't
that public domain. So you
now
don't even need to use a closed system. You can just use ChatGPT to do that because it's
Yeah,
information is
okay,
already,
but I
yeah.
mean the
But
way
that,
things are
yeah.
going, I've got Microsoft 360 on my system, and it's a system that I'm developing. Forget the big company stuff. Individuals are now developing AI tools, AI, controlled systems, which is all about giving me what I want. Peter Llewellyn, forget the rest of you. I want it done in this way. So all you as a publisher has to do is give me the raw data, which is even taking it further. I don't even need the paper. Give me the raw data. And I'll produce the I'll get what I need from that in the way that I need it in my system and represent it to myself in the way. So let's take out a
I think,
whole chunk of the
yeah,
industry. I don't know.
I think ultimately
Go on, Johnny, go on.
that kind of comes down to the fact that it's again it's kind of the verification thing. I'm not to say that might not happen. It's like a few years down the line, but I don't think we're at the stage. I think the question of why couldn't I just do this myself and use Copilot on a published paper? I think the challenge is that's there's a good chance that there's going to be inaccuracies in that. And so if you're only going to rely on that, then there's a danger of receiving information that's wrong. Whereas if you are going to have a system whereby the PLS is generated and the author checks it, the author obviously knows their research inside and out, so they can check it and say, actually, yeah, this is correct. They've identified the key points for my paper. They've not misrepresented anything. This is correct. I've verified it. It goes through this publisher. It goes through a round of peer review, probably two. So then you know that that's going to be accurate, and you don't have to worry about, relying just on that. And I think that's, if you were to use a Copilot thing, you would probably still have to check the original paper and still read that. Despite the fact you've generated a summary.
But to be provocative, it's a slightly self-serving argument, isn't it?
For a
But
layperson, what prompts are you using as well, and like what it's the verification, and it's quite, you know, quite important if what if it's a patient and it tells you something inaccurate and you go to your GP with that, and it's quite significant,
Yeah,
the
okay.
inaccuracies.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm also not entirely disagreeing with what Mario's saying, especially if you know what you're doing. And that's always the proviso. Let's go. We're going to run out of time, and I really wanted to get to what you're doing. I want to know what you personally are doing, if anything, with AI tools. Can we just run around and just see what you are put in your whether it's personal life or work life, frankly. I just want to know whether you've got any things that you do and you go, this is a really neat little tool for this. And you might just go, no, Peter, I don't. But who's willing to kick me off? Someone, Joe, go on. What are you doing in real life? Go on,
Yeah,
Joe.
I'm happy. Yeah, I'm happy to go. So alongside, you know, working on the journal, I also work on sort of editorial content for our website, which is the evidence base, which sort of like does news articles, features, etc., on like real world evidence and stuff. So if I'm writing a topic for that website, I use AI as a in various sort of steps along the process to sort of help me to like construct an editorial and sort of fact check, not necessarily fact check, but help me with the writing process as well. So I, for instance, might use I don't know, a few people have mentioned this Perplexity AI, which I think is a really good tool, and it comes up with a nice summary of a topic, but then it provides you the references as well. And I think that's just brilliant. I then use ChatGPT to help with sort of like the language of writing it as well. I know there's also Cite as well, which can be used to provide references to back up sort of statements and stuff like that. But that is a you have to pay for that, and that's something I'm not happy to do at the minute. I also then, when I'm writing as well, use PaperPal, which then suggests grammar, sentence structure, that sort of thing. But again, I only use the free model, so it depends how much I've used it that month. So I think there's so many different tools that people can just sort of use, and
Yeah,
it's just
definitely.
finding your flow of how you use it and
But you're
how you
finding them
how
quite useful to doing what you're
I do,
doing.
but I don't just rely on one. I use lots of different tools, including Medline as well when I'm writing something, and you know, and it's just bringing them all together in your own. It's just working out your own system of using of how you create content and how you write things.
Just out of interest, I think I know the answer to this because of what you've said subsequently, but with ChatGPT, which you mentioned a few times, are you using the free version or the pay version? Because there's a big difference between the two. But it sounds like you don't pay
Unfortunately,
for
the
anything.
free version. No, I don't
It
pay for
sounds like you don't
anything.
like
It's free.
paying. Okay, but there is a big difference between those two tools.
I
Okay.
know. I'd love to use the image creator on the paid version. I'm an image.
Okay.
I love an image, but yeah,
Right.
I don't have access to that
Okay.
yet. Sure.
Okay. Go on. Who else is going to ju jump in? Hamish, do you want to, have you got a few bits you can throw in the conversation?
I use sort of LLMs quite frequently, especially for generating things like copy. I find that quite useful too. And yeah, sometimes, for summarizing things too. I guess the thing about AI is that, how much are we using in our everyday life is once a tool sort of becomes ubiquitous, we stop calling it AI, we just call it tech.
Exactly.
So, we're all using an enormous amount of AI all the time. So I guess, from every time I pick up my phone to, when I leave my house, I'm using it without even realizing it. So, but within the realms of my sort of working space, I certainly use LLMs quite a lot. And I mentioned Dimensions earlier. I find that an incredibly useful tool for sort of discovery.
Okay, go on, Claire, go on. Have you got anything
Yeah,
to
I
throw
kind
in?
of touched upon it at the start. I mean, we've been kind of playing around with things like writing, if we're doing like mass email editorial board updates, for example, helping us to write those. We've played around with asking it for like commissioning topic ideas, but again, it's getting used to the prompts, which in my team we're not experts on. We start off and it's very top level, and it's learning what to then ask it to get a bit more specific on what you're actually trying to find. So I'm not sure it's saving time rather at the moment with the way we're playing with it. And then things like I personally created like a marketing flyer. So I took some information from our summary of research guidelines and said, create me a marketing flyer, which started off very marketing-y. So then I asked it to tone it down into a bit more scientific language. But yeah, it did a good job. So I think beyond the natural day-to-day things like Hamish mentioned that are just AI that everyone uses without thinking about it, I wouldn't say it's in my personal day-to-day life yet. But I'm sure it will come.
Okay, go on then, Johnny. Have you got something to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, in my role, I don't do as much content creation, so I probably don't use it as much for those sorts of uses. I think in my I definitely use Dimensions a lot, and that's really useful. And I think they've got some really great tools for just discovering content, discovering, up and coming sort of hot topics and interesting research areas. But I also think in my personal life, I quite like it for it's more inspiration. So it's kind of giving like lists of ideas for things or helping to generate something as like a starting point where you're just looking for inspiration of, okay, it might give me a list of ideas and then I might use that to then actually spin off into different ideas. And then that kind of helps to start like a more of a creative process. So that's probably what I find I get the most use out of it for.
Okay, we probably ought to be closing down now. But does anyone want to paint a little bit of a picture of what they think might be happening in a year's time?
Could
I
I
think.
actually? Oh,
Oh,
sorry.
sorry, go on. Who? Johnny, go
I was just
first.
going to
Oh,
say,
no,
just.
Hamish, go first then.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, well, part of the ISMAP keynote speech was really talking about how regulations are going to be sort of enforced as of next year. So I think it's really difficult for any of us to predict. And, the indications were that the regulations could be quite harsh and quite so. She sort of talked about it being the Wild West of AI at the moment, whereas it could be sort of very heavily regulated next year. So we may be having a very different discussion next year.
There was
Sorry,
an
Johnny, over to
obsession at
you.
ISMA. Oh, sorry, I was going to jump
I
in.
was just going to
Go
say,
on.
I agree. I think it's very hard to predict because things advance so quickly, and with the regulations, they could really slow, impede some of what we're talking about here. But I think one point that we haven't really covered that much is on equity and the sort of increase in equity that AI could hold. By, we've touched on PLS, so I won't talk about that too much, but that's obvious. If you can generate more PLS easily, then obviously the equity in terms of information to non-experts is would be excellent. But also in leveling the playing field for researchers, we talked a bit about translations and making that easier for researchers who don't have English as their native language. I think there's great potential for research to be surfaced from those areas more easily, purely based on creating more level playing field around language. So I think equity is really, there's loads of opportunity there for improving equity in research and accessibility by the public too. But I think also the caveat of you have to have a good internet connection and potentially good infrastructure for to be able to use that AI. So there could be some regions that do get left behind if you don't have that.
Okay, go on. We're gonna have to move quite quickly now. But Claire, go on. Say a few words to finish,
Yeah, I was just thinking about the future
and
of
then
AI.
Joe,
There
I'll
was
ask you to.
a great session at ISMAT where it was kind of like a round table format, and you were just given different topics, and it was like, blue sky thinking if AI can create you whatever, as crazy as you can imagine. And it was such a good format and really inspiring, and having that like time and opportunity to actually sit down and just think outside the box of an imaginary world of whatever AI could create. But then, like Hamish said, there's then going to be regulations and just the producing these things, you're limited by your own infrastructure and your platforms, and but it was a great session. It was a great way to think about what could happen.
Wasn't Joe, I'm going to ask you to finish now, but and you may or may not be able to answer this question, but I wasn't at ISMAP, so but wasn't one of the points made, or wasn't the prediction made that it was quite likely there'd be some massive data leak or something like that, and the whole thing would just blow up in everybody's face? Am I oversimplifying or misinterpreting what I heard on Twitter or somewhere?
Possibly, but who knows? Hope not, because I think it should be here to stay. I suppose what Johnny said, in terms of like equaling the playing field, I think that also applies to people, all those academic researchers who don't have access to medical writers as well. Not necessarily, who do speak English, but perhaps don't write good English. So having, the access to those tools also, helps them as well. And that could even help them get more research. There's always the key for more research to be published. Not enough research is published. It might help them get more information out there as well. So I think that's where things could be helpful as well.
Okay, look, we are a bit over time. I'm gonna wrap it up. I think it's fun, and I think we've covered a lot of ground there, and I think there's probably some food for thought. And it's been interesting to see some of the comments flying around in the chat, much of which initially were about the importance of human intervention and human oversight and all this, which I entirely accept or maintain. We seem to put different expectations on the robots than we do on the humans around us. And a lot of chat now coming about cloud-based computing and the privacy of the AI tools, or how, using content through things like GoPilot and so on. So I'll have a look at those a bit later on. That'll be interesting. But I hope we've given people food for thought. As always with these, a lot of it is just to try and put stuff out there and hear some different perceptions and so on, and encourage the audience to contact you guys. So I know I can say for you that you're happy for everyone to contact you. It's worth, I know we always say this with you guys each of the time we have a panel like this. Apart from anything else, AI or not, but you are the right guys at your companies for people to contact, and you encourage people to contact you about anything to do with publications in Europe. So that's just an important point to absolutely emphasize. We've got the right people on here to talk to those company or your companies. So thank you very much, everybody. We're going to wrap up now. Audience, stick around for a few minutes. We've got a couple more minutes to go. But huge thanks to the panelists. Ask you all to just give us a little wave, say goodbye, and take safe. Keep safe. Bye.